Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including almost 200 of the best stations in the U.S., on Sunday, May 27th, Memorial Day 2012. This is episode 878. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by GoToAssist from Citrix. Working in IT can be unpredictable and challenging. There are people who need your help right away, and things can break down any moment. GoToAssist.com from Citrix will help you stay on top of it all. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the offer code TECH. And by Ford, giving customers the power of choice with a full line of electric and hybrid electric vehicles. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about tech, as we do each and every week at this time. Computers and the internet, sure, we'll talk about that. But also cell phones and home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. Last show, I had a lot of fun spending people's money on new computers, new TVs, new cameras. I'm good at that. You want to help? Want me to help you spend money? I can do that. 80. I like doing that. 8888. Ask Leo. I'll help you save money though too. That's because I think I'm pretty fair and honest. When something's not good, I'll tell you. And when you don't need something, and this is something that, you know, I think sometimes tech guys forget. When you don't really need something, but the old thing will do just fine. Most tech guys say, "Oh, get something new." So we got to have a little code, a little signal. Because if you're calling me, as people often are, just looking for permission to get rid of that old clunker, even though you don't really have to, I want you to tug your ear, okay? Let me know, and I'll go, oh, yeah, you got to get a new computer. Tell your spouse you got to get a new computer. It's okay. Tell your folks, oh, yeah, you got to get a new computer. Can't go to school with that thing. On the other hand, if you sincerely want to keep the old clunker alive, I can help you do that, too. So tug the other ear. If that's the case. That way I'll know. Memorial Day weekend, and of course, as always, we'll dedicate this show to the men and women who serve our country so ably all over the world and do such a great job and risk life and limb for our freedoms. We appreciate that, and we remember them, as always, on Memorial Day. 888-827-5536 is the number, toll free. I'll tell you, I'll spend some money, but not much money right now. I couldn't believe this. I was on Newegg.com, not an advertiser. So this is a free plug. But I couldn't believe this. They are selling a USB thumb drive, you know, a little drive that you put in the memory. It's a Patriot, which is a decent brand. 32 gigabytes, which is about as much as you can get. 32 gigabytes for $19. I'm stunned. Now when I get press kits, frequently they'll include a USB drive. And it used to be maybe, you know, you get 128 megabytes. Now it's 2 gigabytes. It's kind of like we don't even bother with anything less. 4 gig. You know, I thought I was joking a few years ago when I said, oh, it's just a matter of time before you get USB drives in boxes of cereal. I think we're close. It's a USB 2.0 flash drive for $23.99. And then I guess this is a deal with Hard OCP, which is a website. And there's a coupon code. But they even tell you what the coupon code is. So it's not like you actually have to read the website or anything. And they get it down to $19. I just 32 gigabytes. I mean, I'm still of an age where I remember it was a big deal. You'd get a hard drive that was 2 gigabytes. I remember buying memory for. I remember my first hard drive actually. And I couldn't afford it because I made the radio station I was working at. I convinced them to buy it. I think it was $2,000 or $3,000. It was 5 megabytes. I couldn't even fit one picture from my point and shoot camera on that hard drive these days. I guess that's part of the reason. Do you remember your first hard drive? Do you remember your first thumb drive? Do you remember how much memory cost when you first got it? We've come a long way, baby. And the thing that's amazing to me, when I look at a $19 32 gig drive, I mean, this is small enough you could keep it on your keychain. And actually, I do keep 32 gigs on my keychain, as a matter of fact. But it was a lot more expensive when I got this. It's fun to go to the courthouse with this on your keychain. It's from Victorinox, a Swiss Army knife, people. It looks just like a pen knife, a Swiss Army knife. So you always get stopped in the metal detectors. But I kind of get a kick out of it because then I flip it open and it's just memory. But that's 32 gigs, and this was, $800 or $900 even just a year and a half ago. It was very, very expensive. $19 for 32 gigs. Wow. And then, you know, the thing to remember is we're not at the end of this progression by any means. In fact, in some ways, we're probably at the beginning of this progression. If that's what's happening every year, it's dropping in price by a factor of 10, maybe more like 30. What happens next year? We get a terabyte for $5, right? I'm telling you, they're going to start including these in cereal boxes, except that people will say, what's this junk in my... Well, this is only a 32 gigabyte drive, and throw it out. What is this junk? So you can see it's kind of fun being the tech guy. The reason I became the tech guy many moons ago, I decided to do this as a career. I was a disc jockey, and I thought, I'm gonna do some in my part time in the early 80s. I think it was probably more like late 70s, maybe. I thought, boy, it'd be really fun if I could support this habit of mine, this expensive habit. I know what I'll do. I'll write for computer magazines. And back then, there were computer magazines. That shows you how old I am. I'll write for computer magazines, and I'll get free software and stuff for review. That's how it all started. And here we are. I don't need anything for... It's $19. I can actually afford that now. 8888 Ask Leo, and everything's kind of followed along. There's a great book by a guy named George Gilder. Now it's about 15 years old, called Microcosm, that talks about this amazing thing and why it's happening, why it is that this stuff is getting cheaper and cheaper, and yet it's getting faster and faster and better. This is kind of unheard of, right? Cars aren't getting cheaper and cheaper. They're getting more and more expensive. Maybe they're getting better, but they're getting a lot more expensive. Why is it in the digital world stuff gets less expensive and more powerful and faster? And it all comes down to basically quantum physics. It turns out as stuff gets smaller, you can put more transistors on a chip. That's Moore's Law, right? Every 18 months will double the number of transistors on a processor or on a memory chip. That's what you're seeing. You're seeing the effect of Moore's Law in this USB key. Every 18 months, we can double the number of transistors. Doubling the transistors means effectively doubling the power, and usually at not doubling the cost, but halving the cost, because these processes, we are now making microprocessors that are 22 nanometers in size, 22 billionths of a meter. It's so small, I can't understand it. what is it, a millionth of a hair thick? I don't even know how you describe it anymore. It's very close. We're now very close to a single atom wide. 22 nanometers. Yeah, you know, there is a point beyond which you cannot go, right? Quantum physics does take over, and you can't make stuff any smaller. And everybody's saying, well, the end of Moore's Law is on the way. We don't know when. Maybe in 5 years, maybe 2 years. We don't know. But 22 nanometers. That's kind of amazing. And by the way, we were at 180 nanometers a couple of years ago. I mean, again, this is Moore's Law. Great book. If you want to understand this a little bit better, George Gilder, G-I-L-D-E-R, and it's called Microcosm. And maybe you can find it around somewhere. But it really explains why we are in this unusual upside-down situation where stuff gets faster and better and cheaper all the time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to the phones next. Hey, before we go on, I'm going to do a little commercial for our friends at GoToAssist. Have I talked to you about GoToAssist before? Yeah, I have, because you've heard about GoToAssist as remote support. But I want to, and by the way, sometimes I wish I could fire up GoToAssist like on that last call, because if I could actually reach into that guy's computer, I probably could figure out what's going on. So people who are on tech support use GoToAssist for that kind of thing. I actually use it with my mom. It lets you do remote support from anywhere, Mac, PC, completely cross-platform. You can also do unattended support, so they don't have to be there. One of the things I really like about GoToAssist now, though, in fact, all of the Citrix stuff is so great this way. If you've been using GoToAssist, you just got a big upgrade. GoToAssist monitoring. This can turn you into a managed service provider. So now you have the remote support, but you also have things like server health monitoring, inventory management. You could discover all of the hardware on your network and all of the software. Our IT guy, Russell Tammany, used to use a similar program. It was like 10 times more expensive. We said, try GoToAssist, and he loves it now. He supports 855 different companies, including ours, with three people. And it's this remote monitoring that makes it possible. Because you be proactive. You fix a problem before you even get notice about it, whether it's a load toner, a bad hard drive, a server that's bad, or as it often happens with us, Wi-Fi problems. But you've got this network tracking that lets you know, because all of the devices on your network are being monitored at all times. They will instant message you or text you or email you when there's a problem. This is Premier Channel 7. They have a crawler that inventories all devices and applications on the network automatically, adds them to your custom dashboard. You can even customize it with your own logo and everything, so it really feels like your tool. GoToAssist, did you see at the top of the page? They're 10 years they've been doing this now. GoToAssist.com. 10 years in remote support. There's a little timeline here of history. It started as Expert City in 1997. So they're celebrating their 10th anniversary by giving away 10 Android Galaxy tablets on Facebook. So you got to go to Facebook and like the GoToAssist page. Let's do that right now. Facebook.com. I'm not eligible to win, of course. /GoToAssist. But you are. So like the page, and that'll put you right in that drawing for 10 Android Galaxy Tabs. They're celebrating 10 years. You can see here the tablet giveaway, all the information about that. I hope you win, and don't forget, 30 days free of GoToAssist when you visit the website, GoToAssist.com. Let's go back to the main page. GoToAssist.com. Click the Try It Free button. It's right here. It's now blue. And use the offer code TECH for Tech Guy. Click promo code TECH, 30 days free. Go to assist.com. We thank Citrix. They've been a great supporter for this radio show. In fact, we wouldn't be national if it weren't for Citrix. When I talked to Premier Radio Networks, they said, well, we love the show. It's great. You know, I was on KFI only, but we need a flagship sponsor to launch it. And I went to Michael Guarnieri over there at Citrix. I said, Michael, I know you like the local show. How'd you like to sponsor the national show? He said, whatever you're doing, I want to support it. And that's how this show got syndicated, so I really owe them. GoToAssist.com, offer code TECH. And if you're in IT, or you want to, you know, like build an IT business, that's the way to do it. It's dark in the studio today. Ozzy's here. Generic comic book action movie music number 7. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Is that the Captain America theme?
Honoring America.
Perfect. Perfect for this day. At least Captain America is patriotic, right? Lou Ferrigno, the Hulk, David Banner, every time the clothes, they burst, they fall off. He really can't wear a uniform, so that's kind of no good. 8888, we were talking about the Avengers in the break. 8888, ask Leo, 888-827-5536. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want to talk tech, I would like to talk with you. And we will start today with Michael in Encino, California. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I am well.
Great. I'm running Windows Vista and just did the update for Java. But now the icon is missing in the control panel and I cannot find it.
The icon for Java?
Yes. I did some research on the Java website, and it's telling me if the icon does not appear in the control panel, means you don't have Java installed, but it is installed.
Well, here's the deal with Java. There's no reason you would want to run it by itself anyway, right?
Correct.
So did you want to, I don't know why you wanted to see it in the control panel. You just wanted to look at it?
Because I wanted to set the preferences within Java, and the only way to access that was
right
through the control panel,
that
I think.
That makes sense. What preferences did you want to set?
There was something about the privacy, where it stores the some of the data, and you have the option to uncheck that.
Well, let me point you to an open source project. This might be better anyway. It's a Java preferences tool. It sounds like the Java install didn't work too well. You'd have a couple of choices. One is you could uninstall and reinstall. But there is a somebody's pointing out you might have installed the wrong piece of Java. This is another thing that makes it very kooky, which is there is the Java virtual machine. That's what you want to install. And then there's the Java for programmers stuff, which you don't want to install. And it could be that that's what happened. But I'm going to give you a link to a Google site called Java Prefs. That's a tool for changing your Java preferences that you can do this. And it gives you far more preferences, frankly. It looks like a registry editor. It's that sophisticated. It gives you far more access to preferences on Java if you really want them. It's an open source project, safe to use. I'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Generally speaking, my recommendation, Java has some notable security flaws in it lately, which is too bad because it was designed kind of not to have these problems, but it has some notable flaws of late. So you do want to get the latest Java, that's for sure, and you get it from Oracle now. That's who bought Sun. Sun made Java. Unless you're on an Apple, in which case you get it from Apple because Apple doesn't let you use Sun's Java. But you do want to have the latest Java. But my suggestion is not to install it and not to turn it on unless you know you need it. Unless you're there. Frankly, there aren't that many sites anymore that use it. Minecraft does, if you're a Minecraft player. There are some tools on the net that do. But it's like Flash. It's getting used less and less. And frankly, you'd be safer not to use it. Now, most browsers, Chrome does this, and I like it, will actually ask you each time you want to use Java. So that's a very handy thing, and I think an important security reminder. It'll say, do you want to allow Java to run? And then you have the choice. Run it always on this site, which if you're going to a safe site and you know it's safe and you always want the Java to run, you could say yes. Otherwise, you'll get asked each time, and I think that's a good thing. So it sounds like it didn't get installed. You can look. If you don't see it in the add remove programs, then you didn't install it. So do it again. And make sure you get the Java virtual machine. That's what you want to install. Denise in Santa Clarita. Hello, Denise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I just had a question. I was wondering why Java Applet runs 100% on the PC computers, but it doesn't really run correctly on the Mac computer.
It's Java Day.
I'm doing a website with a simple Java applet that shows in a book flip style that shows the different projects I design. And I have Snow Leopard 10.7 operating system Mac Mini, And when I show it up on my website on the Snow Leopard with the Java applet, it only shows it 50% of the time.
You mean it won't open up? Sometimes it doesn't open?
It opens up, but it doesn't show the...
It's not reliable.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, Apple does not use the same Java as Windows does.
Oh.
Apple writes its own Java. And so it may be that the app... You didn't write the Java applet, I presume.
No.
Maybe the applet doesn't work with Apple's Java as it does with Windows Java. Let me explain a little bit what Java is, because since we're saying Java, it's not a cup of coffee, although a cup of coffee is always welcome. Java, maybe not so welcome. It is a programming language that was created by Sun some years ago, 1992, 93. It's almost 20 years old now. And the idea of Java was that you write in a language, looks a lot like traditional programming languages, and then the Java engine interprets what you're writing, and it's possible to write a different Java engine for each machine. So when you write a Java program, you write it once, but in theory, it should run the same on every machine, whether it's Windows or Mac or Linux. Each of them has a Java virtual machine or a runtime environment that takes your Java program and runs it, your jar file, and runs it, and then does the right thing for that machine, that thing. So that computer. So that's a nice feature. It was a big advance at the time, because in the past programs were always written for individual computers. You'd write something for Windows or something for Apple. However, as always, there are some catches. For instance, if you just use native Java, the user interface doesn't look like the Mac user interface. In fact, it doesn't even really look like the Windows user interface. So they came up with something called Swing that gives it a native user interface. It sounds like this is where it's falling down on your system, Denise, is that the user interface that was used to create that Java applet wasn't properly modified so that it would work well on both Mac and Windows. Because it sounds like it's a little control that's not working. It's not, the page turn's not looking right. Here's what I would do. Go get the latest Java from Apple. That will be they just upgraded it twice. All you should have to do on your Snow Leopard is do a software update, but I presume you're doing that on a regular basis. If you are, you'll have the latest. You will also note that most browsers now start to warn you, Safari does, Chrome does, that you are going to run Java. That's okay. It was an improvement 20 years ago, and now it's just a burden, to be honest with you. It's just a burden. 8888 Ask Leo. Cheryl's coming up next. Stay tuned. And every time trying to make me cry, aren't you?
21 guns. I know they brought another hero home.
Our Memorial Day music this week by Kyle Benema, musical director. Nice job, Kyle. That's a great one. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Cheryl is on the line from Palmdale, California. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, good morning, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I was having a little Java there, so you caught me in the middle of a sip.
Yeah. A cup of Java does sound good right about now.
I know. All you have to say is coffee and people get a craving. I think this is why Starbucks has a good business model.
Exactly.
Yep. Can't go wrong. What can I do for you?
I have a Dell Latitude laptop.
Yep.
And it's got a built-in wireless, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And I want to be able to USB up with my TV. I have a Vizio HDMI, but it's got a USB connector on there. And I want to be able to, I'm a work junkie, so I want to be able to, when I'm working at home, have a nice big screen to work on.
Oh, I don't blame you. But the USB is not for that. The USB on most TVs is so you could put a thumb drive with pictures on it in there.
Okay, so what do I want to do?
What you want is HDMI. Now, let me ask you about that Latitude. What kind of video out options do you have? What are the ports on the side there?
It's an E6400.
Maybe I can look it up and then I can tell you myself. Let's see. A Latitude.
I see little plugs. I don't see anything.
little ones. Little bitty plugs on the side. Here, let me look. Looks like you got a VGA output. And unless your TV has VGA in, which it might, some TVs do, it's going to take a little complicated stuff to make this work. Let me look more. I can rotate around this computer. It's funny, on the Dell site, they've got, you know, the 3D thing. Yeah, I see a VGA adapter. Wish I could zoom in a little bit on that.
Yeah. And I have that plug-in with the weird, like, you know, it has like 16 prongs or something.
Yeah, that's the VGA.
I have that on the back of my, that's on the back of my TV.
That's on the left side. And you have the same thing on your TV?
Mm-hmm.
That's good news. Because that's good news. You know, this thing is loaded. You've got two FireWire ports. You've got, it looks like a flash card reader. You've got a CD. You got a lot of stuff on this Ethernet. A bunch of USB ports, looks like three. But the only video out, and this is what you need to know, is what is the video out on this computer? That's what we got to figure out. So that's how video is going to come out of the computer, and then now you have to get that into the TV. If you have VGA in, that should be easy. You'll have you have the same kind. So you're just going to get a standard VGA cable. You can get that at any computer store. That's a old school. A monitor cable, basically. You want a monitor cable because you're going to treat your TV like a monitor. Now, wait a minute. Kevin's telling me there's DisplayPort on this thing. Now, I'm going to look and see. I don't see DisplayPort on it. But if it has DisplayPort, that would be easier because you can get a DisplayPort to HDMI connector, and your TV almost certainly has HDMI on it. So that might be a little bit easier.
TV has four HDMI ports.
Yeah. So your TV has, that's going to give you the better result because that's all digital. VGA is analog. So here's the best way to do this. You're going to go to the store and you're going to get, and it's not very expensive, DisplayPort to HDMI adapter. It's not very expensive because DisplayPort basically has the same outputs as HDMI, just a different looking connector. So you're getting really an adapter. And then you'll get an HDMI cable. Don't get an expensive one. They shouldn't be more than $10. People will try to sell you $50, $60, $500 HDMI cables. It's a ripoff. Get a $10 HDMI cable. That's going to go into your TV. And that will make it very, very simple. If you don't have any of this stuff and you don't have a store that has it, you can go to monoprice.com and pick up the two of them for probably $20 or $30 total. Monoprice.com. You want DisplayPort to HDMI. And then you want HDMI cable to your TV. And then you're going to set the TV to that HDMI in, and you shouldn't have to do anything else. There may be, you may have to adjust slightly on the computer for the display, but I don't think so. I think it'll recognize the HDMI out and it'll put it at appropriate size for your TV. Now, word of warning, believe it or not, as big as that TV screen is, it's a lower resolution than your computer monitor.
No.
Yeah. Because it didn't need to be, right? Think about it. When you're watching a high def, all it needs to be is 1900 by 1200. Now, that's not a bad resolution, but it's not super high resolution, especially for that size. If you sit anywhere near that screen, the icons are going to be ginormous, and you're going to see pixels and all of that stuff. But you're going to be you want to do this on the TV so you can sit farther back. Is that the idea?
Correct.
Yeah, you don't want to sit arm's length from an HD TV.
Nope.
Not that you'll go blind or anything. It's just it will look bad.
Okay.
Good, Cheryl. So, again, DisplayPort, that's what's on your computer, to HDMI. Then you get an HDMI cable to your TV. You set the use the clicker. I'm showing my age. Does anybody still call a remote control a clicker? You know why they call it a clicker? Because they used to click. Not anymore. So you use a remote control to set your input to that particular HDMI port, and you're good. And you're good. 1920 by 1080 is okay, and that's probably what your TV is, so, you know, if it's a high-def TV. Lance Springfield, Massachusetts, home of The Simpsons. Hi, Lance.
Hello, George.
You can call me George. Do you call Coast to Coast a lot? Is that why you called me George?
I think I'm
George Norrie? It's okay.
It's like the old SNL.
Hello, George. Hello.
You can call me Jay.
You can call me anything you want. Just call me the tech guy.
There you go. Hey, this is what I'm thinking of doing. I've got like 400 or 500 CDs, and I'm thinking of just getting rid of everything and going to, I guess it would be a membership or a rental.
Yeah, yeah. You know, physical media is dead. It just nobody told it yet. So you're right. Get rid of the CDs. Get rid of the DVDs. Get rid of the Blu-ray. Unless you're really, if you're really a videophile, you might want to stay with Blu-ray just because it's going to give you the best possible picture. But for most people, music and video now, we just stream it. We just so is that you're thinking of music? Or you're thinking of video?
Music. And what I'm looking for is who would have like the largest catalog. That my interest is primarily like Yes. Joni Mitchell, Beatles, stuff like that.
Well, here's the good news. All of them have a 30-day trial, so you can see. So here's what I would suggest. There's three big ones for streaming. There's RDO, R-D-I-O. There's MOG, M-O-G. And there's Spotify. And they all have essentially the same library because they've all made the same deals with the music industry. But what I would do is get a free trial for the three of them and see if the particular songs you want. I'm a big Joni Mitchell fan. You're not going to have any trouble with that. You know what I always search for? There's a Joni Mitchell album that's hard to find, Hissing of Summer Lawns. I don't know why. It's a great album. But for some reason, it's not on many services. That's what I use to judge.
What was the first one?
RDIO.com, radio without an A. By the way, every radio station that we're on, and we're on almost 200 now, is going to kill me. I'm going to get calls from every programmer. How dare you recommend? Because these things, they're killing music radio. By the way, there's one more that you're going to want anyway, even if you have RDO, Spotify, or MOG. You're going to absolutely want Pandora. Pandora's cheap. It's, $36 for a year. And it's it's kind of like radio. You give it an artist you like. I have a Joni Mitchell station because I'm kind of a girl. And on the Joni Mitchell, so you enter an artist in, and what Pandora does is it gives you other artists of similar ilk. And it makes a great radio station. So you're going to want Pandora no matter what. And then I would try all three and see what you like best. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Here comes the sun.
We can play the Beatles.
You're on.
We can play the Beatles. We pay our license fees. Beatles are a good way to test those streaming music services. As far as I know, none of them except Pandora have Beatles music on them. On iTunes, you can buy Beatles music on iTunes. And that was a big deal. Remember last year when they made that deal? Huge deal. And I think what they did is they made an exclusive, so it's just a matter of time. So there are some artists, Metallica was famous among them, who just say, no, you can't have my music. But really the pressure now to put your music on these streaming things is huge. And they don't make any money on it. They make a very small royalty. It's not even as lucrative as, say, radio. Michael Jackson made a penny and a half when we played that song or something. Does he still own the Beatles catalog? Somebody does. I'm sure somebody does. Maybe a Yoko. But when you listen on Spotify, when you listen on RDO, when you listen on MOG, fractions of a penny per play. I mean, it's hardly anything. But the artists, AC/DC, there's another group that doesn't really like their stuff on this stuff. But the artists are starting to realize, it's this or nothing. And it's publicity. Really, what's happening in the music industry is you make money by touring. And in fact, you can tell Madonna's latest contract. She did not sign a deal with a record label. She signed a deal, a very large deal, with Live Nation, a touring company. The deal was to do some albums, but then to tour behind them. And that's where you make the money. That's where you make the money. And so I think what they're realizing now is things like Spotify, MOG, and RDO are just the new radio. They're the new way people find you, and they're great for that. Pandora is great for that, by the way. That's what Pandora is all about, is music discovery. So all of these three streaming, last caller wanted to know about streaming services. I'm still talking about it. All three, Spotify, RDO, and MOG, they're the big three, are $10 a month for unlimited play. they have pretty much the same size catalog. There may be gaps in one that are filled in the other, but as far as I can tell, they're all similar. And they're all very good, in my opinion. And a great way to discover music, because all three have social features that let you find out what your friends are listening to. You could follow people, much like on Facebook. And that's and that helps you discover. To me, what these services are about is two things. One is like a radio, like listening to music in the background. And two is discovering, finding new music that you like. And the nice thing about these streaming services is you don't have to buy an album. You can listen to an album and see if you like it in pretty much full quality and see if you like it. So they're good for that. But it'd be nice if everybody bought a few albums a year. Just buy a CD. Buy a few CDs, whatever it is. Buy something on iTunes or Amazon. Just every, you know, I just recently bought on Amazon. They suckered me in. They had a free deal. And Amazon does this. If you haven't checked out Amazon's MP3 library, a very good library where you buy songs. They're usually 99 cents, just like iTunes, sometimes less. But they also have free songs all the time, as does iTunes. And occasionally they do a free album. They did a free, like 50 songs, cover songs, which were really fun. And then I thought, well, this is fun. And one of them was a Carpenters guy. You start digging around, you start clicking. Then I found an album called If I Were a Carpenter, which is all Carpenters songs done by other people, like crazy people, like Shonen Knife, you know, doing calling occupants of interplanetary craft. It was great. So I bought that. So buy an album every once in a while. Just spend some money so that the artists continue to make these things. Was it Google Play? You're right. It wasn't Amazon. Thank you, J.C. Calhoun. You see, I'm not even paying any attention. It was Google. It was the play.google.com in the music section. That's what it was. You're right. But this my larger point is, even if you're still buying CDs, DVDs, and Blu-rays, the world is moving fast away from that. And it's just a matter of time before physical media is gone. It's going away. John in Fullerton, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
For your information, I'm a DSL Extreme user and an ESET user.
Wow. Now we got to get you to use Carbonite, Stamps.com, and we'll be set.
That's next.
All our sponsors.
I got a Windows 7 computer that works great, but every once in a while I lose some pictures. And the only way to get them back is to reformat my computer, spend hours doing it, and then everything works for about an hour. So I thought I would tap into your wisdom to see if you can give me a few key clicks to keep me from spending these hours fixing my computer.
I am sure that having to reformat and install Windows is not necessary. But Windows 7 works great, except that every few days I have to reinstall it. But other than that, but there's something else going on. So you're saying a few hours after you rebuild Windows, pictures start disappearing.
Well, actually, it's on eBay. What happens, I go on eBay and I got a page of pictures, you know, different items for sale. And only the first 20% of the pictures show up, and the others are blank. But when I click on the sites of the blank pictures, they come up. But I can't preview in advance.
So you're saying in your browser, as you are using, is it Internet Explorer?
Yes.
In your browser, as using Internet Explorer, the pictures will load on eBay up to a point, and then the rest will be question marks.
That's right.
I would use a different browser.
I've reinstalled Windows Explorer separately, and I've tried quite a few other things. It just doesn't come back without reformatting.
Do you mean restarting?
Reformatting.
You're actually erasing the drive.
That's right.
And putting Windows back on. I'm so sorry. That seems a long way to go just because you're not seeing some pictures in a browser. So let's stop doing that. Let's not do that anymore.
Okay.
Are you using security software of any kind?
ESET. ESET. Only. Everything else is eliminated.
Okay, good. Sometimes security software will block images, although that doesn't seem like what's going on. Here's what I would do. I would get Google's Chrome browser, which is a free browser. It's an excellent browser. It's chrome.google.com, C-H-R-O-M-E. And I think Chrome is an excellent browser. It's a fast browser. It's a secure browser. It has Flash built in. See if that works. See if that solves the problem. In other words, you go to the same page and all the pictures load. If it does, then there's something strange going on with Internet Explorer. I'm not sure what. It could be. Now, this sometimes happens. Maybe that particular eBay page, those pictures are missing. You know, it might just be that they're pointing to the wrong thing. So it might not be anything on your computer. Jeff is reminding me that if you press F5, function key 5, when you're on a page, it will reload the page. And actually, if you hold the shift key down when you do it, it'll force the entire page to reload. And see if the pictures show up then. The other thing that might be happening, John, how much memory, how much RAM do you know that you have on your machine?
Two gigs.
Wonder if it's running out of memory, like it's getting through the certain number of pictures and then it's just running out of memory.
Well, the computer is stripped. I only use it for eBay. That's it.
Isn't that strange? Have you tried to refresh the F5 with the shift key held down?
Oh, yes. Done that. Been there, done that.
And that doesn't do anything.
Nothing. But the strange part of it, when the picture is missing and I click on that site, the picture comes up.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. That just means maybe the links on the site are proper, but they're not proper on eBay. Here's how you could find out. If you right-click on the image, one of the options will be to open image in new tab or in a new window. And what that will do is use the same address but start a new browser window or a new browser tab with just that image in it. If it still doesn't load, then that means the image is missing. So it's not you.
Okay, but again, if I go to the same page, the image comes back after the hours of reformatting.
So that makes sense. But I don't want you to do that anymore, John. That can't possibly be the problem. That seems very odd. I would try Chrome. Have you tried any other browsers?
No, but I'm going to do it now.
Yeah, I'd try Chrome. I like it better anyway than Internet Explorer. You can keep both, so it's not an issue. You can use one when you want to. You've cleared your cache. You know, I'm wondering if the cache is part of the problem. That's one. The only thing I could think of that would be fixed when you reinstall Windows is you're starting with a fresh cache. So it's possible that, you know, there's in Internet Options, you can clear the cache. Instead of reformatting, try clearing the cache on IE. See if that fixes it. It's very strange. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Are those also Hondas there? No, that's a Kia. You know what? Maybe it's not. They wouldn't put a Kia in a Honda ad. It's pretty cute, although very geeky. We'll watch more later. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, cameras, digital photography, all that jazz at 888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Now, if I talk about something, I mention an article or refer to something, you can always find out more about that at techguylabs.com now in its waning days. Yes, I'm finally killing this site. It's about time, because look at it. It's boring. It looks like it was designed in 1998, doesn't it? It's old. So here's the good news. We have replaced, or are in the process of replacing Tech Guy Labs with a brand new, so much more functional site that will allow you to participate. We're going to have Team Tech Guy, and people can help answer questions, because frankly, that's kind of part of the fun. I know at least some of you listen because you want to catch me out. Oh, Leo was wrong on that one, or because you've got a better answer. Well, now you'll be able to go to Tech Guy Labs and give us the answer. Well, not now, soon. TechGuyLabs.com, and I think it'll make it better. For instance, we had a call yesterday. Guy, I think he's in the chat room right now, wanted to know how to get scratches out of an iPad. And he said, I'd heard that if you rub it with banana, it'll get rid of the scratches. And my reaction to that is, well, if even if it doesn't, you have a nice, sweet-smelling iPad there. So, but see, this would be a great that question alone, and we'll be able to do that because we're backfilling right now with all the previous shows. We'll be able to do that. We'll have my answer. We'll have a video of it, as a matter of fact, so you can actually jump to that part of the show and watch that video automatically and see what I said. But then you could say, no, Leo, you're wrong. I've used banana for years, and it works beautifully, or whatever. Or, no, I think you should use sulfuric acid. It'll fix the scratches anyway. So that's where it'd be so great. That's where it'll be so great. Actually, we had a caller who's asking about an automotive repair shop work to fix these scratches? Let's put him on the line. Aaron from the High Desert. Hi, Aaron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you this afternoon?
So you have a scratch in your laptop?
No, I'm calling about the fella who called in yesterday. I guess he Skyped in from Norway with a scratch.
Yeah, Banana Sam, he's calling himself now because he
has a new handle.
Yeah.
My thought was that I hear on the radio advertised out here the automotive glass replacement guys are offering scratch and divot repair, and I wondered if that technology could be used on his the screen on his laptop.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I had this done once, and they just filled it in, right, with an epoxy-like substance, and it looks horrible. I mean, it's no longer a crack, but there's still a little blob on your screen, so that's not going to work on a computer so well. Now, a very important point is that the glass on your tablet and most phones is different from the screen on many laptops. Now, we're starting to see more and more glass screen laptops, but a lot of them still have plastic, and you do not want to sand it, you do not want to polish it, you do not want to buff it because it's very, very soft. More and more laptops, Apple started this, have glass protective covers. The LCD screen is underneath the glass on a phone, on a laptop, on an iPad, if you have glass. And generally speaking, that glass is going to be something called Gorilla Glass. It's Corning. It's kind of a funny story. Corning invented this very tough glass some years ago and couldn't sell it. Nobody wanted it. And they were actually closing the plant down. They said, you know, there's no market for it. When along came a guy named Steve Jobs, who said, no, I've got this new phone, and I really need some tough glass for this new phone. Not only did he get Corning to bring the plant back, he got him to build more. And, of course, the iPhone, even though it never said it had Gorilla Glass, because that's the way Apple is. Apple's never going to say, you know, promote another company's product. But Apple brought Gorilla Glass back, essentially, and they still use this Corning tough glass, in fact, Gorilla Glass 2 now, but it is harder to scratch. But once you get a scratch in it, it's also harder to fix. Almost everybody uses Gorilla Glass now. I think it's probably Corning's biggest product. I don't think a windshield repair place is going to be the right thing, because I think that they just fill it with a resin, probably epoxy or something like it. That will keep the windshield from cracking further, but you can see it. It's not invisible, and that's no good. Terry, Jacksonville, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Terry.
Hey, Leo. How's it going, man?
It's going great. How are you?
I could be better. We got, you know, Tropical Storm Beryl off the coast there down on us, but doing pretty good.
Oh, dear. Well, stay safe.
Yeah, it's going to make landfall tonight, but whatever. We're Floridians. We're used to it.
Yeah. That's the price you pay for living in a beautiful part of the country.
Exactly. All right. Well, I got a question. I have a computer. It's very, very nice, very, very powerful. Why can't I have an easy way to make an animated background for my desktop? I figure with the amount of resources that we have nowadays with computers, that should be an option. Just simply right-click on a large GIF or something like that and just say, hey, I want this in my background, and it will not do it.
You can, you can get them, but you need software to do it.
Yeah, and I understand that. I heard that Vista used to have, that used to be an option for the...
Yeah, it was what we called Active Desktop. And anybody who used Active Desktop for any length of time knows that the most common experience of Active Desktop is the alert, Active Desktop has crashed. Would you like to restart it? It also is a massive security flaw. So, in general, I would say you're right. We do now have extra CPUs. We've got such powerful processors. Many of us have quad-core processors, and only one's doing anything most of the time, that you probably could dedicate an entire processor to having beautiful wallpaper. So, what you need is an app. Now, the one that I would recommend is free. It's called Okozo, OKOZO.com. And they don't charge for it. I don't do it because I'm always afraid this is going to kill my, the speed of my computer. But these are beautiful. You can actually put videos on your wallpaper, So,
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you can do it.
That's basically exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Because, I've got a really, really high-res, GIF of, a rain running down a window pane. I just say, hey, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, wouldn't that be pretty?
Yeah,
check it out.
I was asking my techie guys, and they're just, scratching their heads.
techie guys in general, we're kind of not crazy about this kind of thing, because it's essentially a program running in the background all the time. But you're absolutely right. You've got plenty of processor power nowadays. We've gotten so crazy. You know what happened was that Intel kind of went down the road of making the, they were promising 4 gigahertz processors. And this was a few years back. And they got there and they realized, holy cow, this thing is hot and unreliable. And maybe this isn't going to work. So they backpedaled. They actually, they were lucky. They had a little Skunkworks project going in Israel at the time. CPU designers, this is actually a smart thing that Intel did. Just in case this whole 4 gigahertz processor thing didn't work out, they had some smart fellas in Israel working on something else. And they went to them and said, this press cut thing, it's not working out. What do you got? And the guys in Israel said, we got the Core 2. What do you think? And Intel said, we like it. 2 processors. Both running slower, maybe 1.5-2 gigahertz. But people in their head are going to say, well, 2 plus 2, that's 4. The truth is, we don't really multitask that often, so it's really more about marketing than anything else. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So what do you think? Is this a Honda ad? I'm thinking not now.
Really, really, really nicely. And basically, what I want to say about this song is that this song really tends to exemplify you and Isaac's relationship. It really does to me. So, here it goes.
Oh, we're watching viral videos now. Have you seen this video yet? 1.5 million people have. And the debate is this an ad? So a guy gets his girlfriend in the back of what he is very clear right at the beginning is a Honda. It's an older Honda. It's a CRV. It's not the newest Honda. And then he drives down the street and all their friends and everybody jump out and they're all singing. And the song is, I Think I Want to Marry You. It's a proposal. It's very romantic. And a lot of people, 1.5 million people have watched it on YouTube. It's well done, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's impossible that somebody did this. I think it's probably pretty romantic. It's cute. I don't think it's a Honda ad. That's on my vote, but a lot of people do. You guys are very cynical. Very cynical. I think the girlfriend's very happy. And I think the dancers are not so good that it's... Some are saying it's a professional dance troupe. They've got a marching band from a high school in here. They've got Skype dancers on laptops. So that apparently these are all friends. This can't be an ad. You people are so cynical. They say the chat room is debating this right now. The choreography's too good. It is, if you haven't seen it on YouTube, Isaac's live lip dub proposal. On Wednesday, he says, I told my girlfriend to meet me at my parents' house for dinner. When she arrived, I had stationed my brother to sit her in the back of an open Honda CRV. Now, that's where the idea that this is an ad comes from, is the fact that he says, both in the video and in the description, an open Honda CRV. I gave her some headphones. He said, I wanted to play her a song, and so they drove down the street, and there he is on his knees. He says, take off the headphones. And then all the people in the background. And he says, this is a real marriage proposal. That's pretty romantic.
Will you let me spend the rest of my life?
That's pretty romantic. I don't think that's an ad. And if it is, shame on Honda. Because how dare you pull our heartstrings like that? Well done. 8888 Ask Leo. Although, I gotta warn you, and I understand the reason for the cynicism. More and more, you're going to see companies like Honda, like Ford, like Coca-Cola, like Pepsi. They're already doing it. Fake these videos so that they can get you to watch them, and they will be subtle. Because the truth is, advertising, at least the kind of advertising you're seeing on television these days, is not working. People aren't, it's too easy to skip it. Did you see the network executive was mad at Dish? The new Dish DVR has a 30-second skip feature in it. Lets you skip commercials. And you see the network executive who said, that wasn't very nice. Don't you know we're in trouble? Do you really have to do that? So now, of course, they're suing. The AutoHop ad skipping technology. They're being sued by Fox, NBC, and CBS because they're offering a commercial-free TV. You know, I understand. I mean, this radio show is supported by its sponsors. We don't want you to skip the commercials. And I think the networks are saying, look, you know, it's expensive to produce American Idol. Somebody's got to pay for it. But notice how they do American Idol now. There's Coca-Cola all over the show. They embed it into the content. And that's what's going to happen. They know this is coming. They just they don't want Dish to do it too soon. Just wait. Can you wait a couple of years so we can just figure out this embedded stuff, because you're going to kill us here. So they're suing. They say Dish's Hopper service violates a licensing agreement between the networks and Dish. It's a form of unlicensed video on demand. They'd love to kill DVRs. I am not unsympathetic because we are ad-supported free media, and ad-supported free media will go away if nobody watches the ads, but we're already seeing that. I mean, they're really not working. They're starting to work less and less. And so what you'll see is more and more companies will figure out ways to put, and I'm not sure this is a good thing, the ad into the content. or viral video like this. If you can get 1.5 million views on YouTube of a video, and you know, the trick is to make it a subtle ad, and that's what, if it is a Honda ad, that was pretty subtle. Deanne, Valencia, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Deanne.
Hi, I have a Mac Mini with Snow Leopard installed on it, and I get an operation error code -8003 every time when I try to empty the trash on my desktop.
-8003. I wonder what that is. You know, error codes are so worthless. I don't know why companies still do error codes. Because who's that? What is that telling you anything? No. And even if it were, there probably wouldn't be anything you could do about it. So a couple of things to try. If you have something in the trash that is still open, the trash will complain. Usually it complains in English. It's unusual. Apple used to use error codes a lot. They've stopped. I'm surprised you're still seeing them. Hold down the option key when you empty the trash. See if that fixes it. What that does?
Yeah, I did that, and it still does it.
Still
does
it.
What I've been doing is going to the Apple Store for them to empty it for me.
Dude, will they do that? Is that a service that the Apple Store offers?
Yeah, a genius bar.
It takes a genius to empty my trash. I have to get a genius. I can't do it myself. That, talk about an easy-to-use computer. Only a genius can empty the trash. Oh, that's ridiculous. I wonder what they're up to. Did they don't explain to you? They just empty it and they say, get out of here?
Well, I looked it up, and there's some kind of where you have to update the preferences or delete the preferences and add a you have to go into terminal. And there's a way,
golly,
then it will empty it for you, but it's just such a pain in the butt, you know?
So, but why doesn't the genius fix it? I don't understand. All he does is empty the trash and say, thank you for visiting.
Well, one of them tried to fix it by going, like, this utility and emptying out the preferences, and he did a bunch of other little stuff, and then it still did it.
Apparently, it's a time machine problem. Are you using time machine backup?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. You're not going into the time machine partitions and trying to delete things in there.
No.
Because that's the error message. I'm looking at, and I'll put this in the show notes at techguylabs.com. There's a Apple support thread about this in which they say, if you try to delete files in your time machine backup, you will get this error message, perhaps by accident. You did it. So here's a program that will fix it, and it's basically doing those things that you talked about, but it does it for you automatically. It's called Trash It. Two words,
okay.
Trash It. And you can find it on from No Name Scriptware.
Okay.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All Extreme. Yeah, my friend Annie Yannacco, who is a technology journalist for the Chicago Sun-Times, wrote a long blog post, which somebody in the chat room pointed me to, about that wedding video, the proposition, Isaac's Live Lipdub proposal. He said, if this is, in fact, a viral video for a car company, I will never buy that car again. I will never. And, you know, that's the risk, right? If companies start doing this, if they start to trick you, I go the other direction. I think the future of advertising is to be honest. Is to talk about benefits. It's like the old Sears ad, the Sears catalog, the Sears robot catalog. Remember, they didn't say you need to use this or people won't like you. They said, this is what our product will do for you. Here's why you might want to use it, and if you don't, fine. That's the future of advertising. Good article in the in OregonLive.com about this marriage proposal, because it was in Portland. And the explanation is in here. These are all theater people. See, I think the reason the cynics say, oh, this has got to be an ad, is because these people are too uninhibited. They're too fun. They're too good. They're theater folk. This is what they do. They perform. So although Honda does get a mention in the commercial, in the article about the commercial again. So If it is a Honda commercial, they're getting a lot of crazy press. But I would guess, based on this article, this is the real deal. This is the real deal. They don't, you know, this is not a fake. But there is a little, I think there is a little warning in there for companies that might want to start do viral video for advertising. Careful. Old Spice did it right, didn't they? You knew the Old Spice was an ad. You knew it was a commercial. You'd seen the guy in the commercials. And then when Old Spice did a very clever YouTube campaign where they got Isaiah back into the studio in his half-dressed state, and he actually Isaiah Thomas is the guy. Is it Isaiah Thomas? What is his name? No, it's not Isaiah Thomas. He's the actor in this. Former football player Mustafa. That's right. They got him back in the studio, stripped him down, and had him talk to bloggers and others and say, hey, told my friend Kevin Rose, who ran Dig, I'm sorry you're feeling sick, Kevin. Maybe some Old Spice. Now, that was an obvious commercial, but it was viral because it was fun and it was funny. And I think that that's the way to do it, is to admit this is a commercial, but have some fun with it. Break the fourth wall. Things like that. Don't try to trick people, because you know when you if you try to trick people, and they find out, they get mad. It could have the complete opposite effect. Rick in Orange, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, how you doing?
Just fine, Leo. Hey, I'm Rick. I'm in Orange. I'm in a gorilla suit.
I can't help you. I'm sorry. Why are you in a gorilla suit, Rick?
Because it makes people happy.
Okay, this is like a thing you do?
Yes, sir. We've talked before.
Are you sweating? Are you sweating right now?
Actually, no. Actually, it's fine. It breathes real well as long as the wind is blowing.
Are you outside? It sounds like you're on the street corner.
Yes, sir. I'm on the outside. I'm in Orange, 606 West Cotella. It's called Design Center.
So if you're driving by the Design Center in West Cotella and you see a gorilla on a cell phone.
Yes. No, I'm on earbuds, ear mask.
Oh, good. You can't even tell the gorilla's talking to me.
Right, absolutely.
Are you dancing, Rick? Are you dancing around? Are you jumping up and down?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
This is the future of advertising. I have often wondered, you know, I see these guys all the time with the big arrows. They're dancing around. They're twirling around. I've often wondered, does that work?
Yes, it does. I've been doing this with these people for like 8 years now. I used to be a clown, and I step it up and do a gorilla, and it really works for them.
It must, because you've been doing it. I mean, 8 years, people keep hiring you back.
Yeah.
Is it minimum wage, or is it a little better than that, Rick?
I'm getting like $10 an hour. You know, whatever.
Hey, it's a job.
Hey, it's something.
It's not like work.
Hey,
do you do marriage proposals? Because I think I have an idea.
Oh, well, of course. Absolutely. I love it. Absolutely. Yeah. Come on by.
I'll get on my knee. I don't care. So what can I do for you, Rick?
Last time I talked to you, I talked about my Evo. I've gone through 5 Evos, and I'm talking to you now on number one. Number one was the Camp.
You know, it's really funny because you had the worst luck with Evos. I remember this now.
Yeah.
But you finally found one that is not. This is the Sprint Evo Android-based phone. You finally found one that is still working for you. And you love it so much you didn't give up on them.
It's my original one that I had for 3 years.
Oh, I see. You got the new Evo and you went back to the original.
I've gone through 5 of them already.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's hard. Being a gorilla is hard on smartphones.
Huh?
They probably use Gorilla Glass on it, though. That would be a good idea.
It's them. It's their workmanship.
Have you ever tried a banana on a scratched screen? Has that ever worked for you? I'm sorry.
No, I haven't.
I'm sorry.
I haven't.
Do you eat bananas when you're in the gorilla suit? I guess it'd be kind of hard.
Absolutely.
You do?
Absolutely. And people will drive by with the banana and show it to me. I love it. It's awesome. And I love listening to you. I listen to you on the weekend.
So now when we see the gorilla in front of the design center, we'll know that he's listening to the tech guy on our mothership KFI in Los Angeles.
On iHeartRadio through my Evo.
Via iHeartRadio. That's awesome.
Yeah, I love you guys.
All right. You deserve $11 an hour for that. That's good. Well, now, what can I do to help you, Rick?
Thank you.
Yes.
Huh?
What can I do to help you?
That was it, dude. Just to say hi to you.
All right. Well, thank you, Rick. You know, it fits in because we're talking about advertising. I've always wondered, you see these guys jumping up and down with the arrows? I guess it works. Even better if you're in a gorilla suit. We have a tax little tax store down the street that they have a guy in. Yeah, they have. You've seen it, the Statue of Liberty, right? Or Uncle Sam. We all see it. It must work. It certainly draws the eye. $10 an hour. It's good to know what that you know. Maybe that's if you have your own suit. Julie Downey. We learn something on this show, don't we? Julie and Downey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Julie.
Hey, Leo. We love your show. We listen to it. We do our home improvement projects every weekend.
I love doing a radio show on the weekends because I know the people are listening as they're doing stuff. They're enjoying their day. So that's great.
Exactly.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
So I'm hoping you can help me. I have a Dell laptop. I use Windows 7. I manage my email with Outlook. Have an iPhone 4S. I sync everything with iTunes. No problem.
Good.
I recently got an iPad 2, and a friend encouraged me to start using iCloud. Now I have my contacts listed 3 times only on my iPhone.
Oh, I hate that when that happens.
What am I doing wrong?
I hate it. Well, you're not doing anything wrong. Syncing, it always runs this risk of duplication. But what's happening from the iCloud is it's pulling. Do you have a desktop using iCloud as well?
I don't know if it's on my Dell or not.
No, probably no, it's not. So it's just from the iPad. Hold on a second. We'll help you with this in just a moment. We got to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, you know, I want to briefly take a little moment to talk about our friends at Ford, ford.com/technology. They not only sponsor the radio show and the podcast, they also sponsor the Tech Guy podcast, and I'm very grateful to them for that. As you know, I am a proud Ford owner of my Mustang, but I've been looking at the new electric vehicle technology, and I've got to say I'm pretty excited. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric is here. It's at your EV-certified Ford dealers. It's not all Ford dealers, but many. And they are doing some neat stuff. I think they got a little criticism. Ford got a little criticism up front for not having an electric vehicle when the other guys did, Chevy and Nissan. And you know what they said? They said, patience, because we want to do something better. And they have. They have. They have created an electric vehicle. They're going to make it possible for you to get any of their cars, any of their vehicles electric. The first is the Focus, and it's fantastic. They're using state-of-the-art battery technology, the regenerative braking, which returns 90% of the energy normally lost during braking back to the battery, and that's how they're getting the best-in-class range of 76 miles on a charge. Nobody can do that. They're getting the best-in-class 240-volt charge time of, get this, 3 to 4 hours when you have the optional charger put in. You're going to want that outlet, the Leviton outlet. 3 to 4 hour charge, that's half what the Nissan electric, the Leaf, does. Half. The most fuel-efficient five-passenger vehicle in America, that best city rating in its class, 110 MPGe. That's the new EPA rating for electric and hybrid electric vehicles, the E. 110 miles per gallon E. That's the Ford Focus Electric. You got to drive one right now. They've of course, the Ford Sync and the MyFord Touch have been updated so that they do, you know, everything on the dashboard helps you get the best battery life. You know how long you've got to drive. So it'll even help you find the most eco-friendly route. They have Enlighten Mode. They have Engage Mode. They have Empower Mode. This is cool stuff. I got to tell you, you've got to check out the new electric Focus and the smartphone apps. that give you all sorts of information about how the, you know, you can look on your phone and it'll say, yep, you're half charged. Look at this. Mike's EV is at home waiting to charge. 51% charge. Everything's in here. This is so cool. It is really a state-of-the-art electric vehicle. And I want you to visit your Ford dealer and try one. Or go to Ford.com/technology and take a look. And next year, early 2013, you know, I was all ready to get the Ford Focus Electric. And then they told me about the new Energy, the Ford Fusion Energy, which is a plug-in hybrid. So this is kind of the best of both worlds. It both charges and is used in an electric vehicle. And if you need longer range, you can use the gas engine. And it's going to get a combined fuel efficiency rating of over 100 mpg. We're talking pennies to use this thing. Read about it. The batteries, the exhaust system, the regenerative braking, all the stuff they're doing. And boy, if you've never driven an electric car, you got to, because the torque on these things is incredible. Ford.com/technology. We thank them for their support. Great stuff. No, there is a friends and family deal, Jeff, but I don't know if I'm going to get that. I paid full retail on my Mustang.
All right, ease that library.
Look like money. My eyes look like money. Everywhere I go, I'm looking nice. I look like money.
It's all about money. Unfortunately. Not for me. No. I'm doing this because I care. I care about you, Julie.
Thank you.
I care. So, Julie, you used iCloud for syncing on your iPad. Do you have an iPhone and an iPad? Do you have multiple? What I'm trying to find out is if you have multiple devices using iCloud.
Yes.
You do. So what happens with iCloud, and Apple's really not, you know, I think Apple doesn't really know how to do this, to be honest. This is not their, they make great hardware. I like their operating systems. But they've never been good with their cloud stuff. MobileMe was a disaster. And I'm starting to think iCloud is not so great either. So in general, when you sync phone books, it's not unusual to get dupes. Because what's happening is it's getting an entry from your iPhone and an entry from your iPad, and it's not merging them. It's just saying, well, I don't want to mess with it. So your only choice at this point is to go pick one of them.
Okay.
And go through it and delete the duplicates and merge it and stuff.
Okay.
There are some tools that are designed. You don't use a Mac though, so you know there are some tools designed to do this on the Macintosh. For instance, there's a new address book program called CoBook for them, but it's only for the Mac. But it does kind of merge your contacts, and it'll add contacts from Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn as well, which is kind of nice because you get images and so forth. It's a really nice app, but it's on the Mac. And you're using Windows. So I would just say you're going to have to do this by hand, and probably the easiest place to do it is the iPad.
Okay. Can I ask you one more thing?
Sure.
The same way with, like, emails. You know how, if I got an email from you, it would show up on my Outlook on my laptop. It shows up on my iPad. It shows up on my iPhone. I have to delete it in three different places.
Wait a minute, though. Oh, and I see. If you delete it on one, it doesn't delete it on the others. Yeah, that's intentional behavior. They don't want people to go, wow, where'd my mail go? Whose email are you using?
I just Verizon.
Okay, so Outlook. Is it Yahoo that Verizon uses, or is it it's their own?
Right.
So you're probably using a POP server. So POP servers don't have that capability. If you use an IMAP server, for instance, like Gmail, then you can set it up so that when you delete a message on one server, it goes away on the others.
Right. Okay.
But that's just the way. So you might check to see if Verizon offers IMAP, and if they do, and you start using that, then you'll get the behavior you want. But POP doesn't support that. Because the way POP works is they have all the messages on the server, and then different email programs get it. And you delete it, you're only deleting it locally.
Okay. All right, great. Well, thanks, Leo.
Sure, I'm Julie. I wasn't much help. Go back to your work. contact sync is a problem. Now, do be careful if you're using iTunes and syncing your iPad or iPhone to your computer via iTunes, make sure you turn off. If once you turn on iCloud syncing, turn off iTunes contact syncing. You don't want to use both. That will cause duplication. So careful. It's always a problem. I'll be honest. The first time I use a new synchronizing service, whether it's Google, Microsoft, Apple, whoever, missing link. I always take my address book, which I've carefully combed and cultivated and preened to make look beautiful, and save it somewhere. I export it or back it up just in case, because then you turn on the syncing and all of a sudden you got 15 copies of a number. You don't want that. Syncing is normal. Normally going to cause these kind of problems. So save, if you've got once you get your address book beautiful, save a copy. You can always go back. We're going to take a break, come back in just a bit with Victor in Pico Rivera, California. He needs software to speed up his PC. You see the ad? Victor in Pico Rivera, California. Hi, Victor. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning.
Good morning. Afternoon. You've been holding on long enough. It probably started as morning. Thank you. Thank you for your patience.
And I do use NAT 32.
Good. Are you happy with it? Has it worked well for you?
Yeah, it does seem to. We get a lot less hassle because it's three PCs that I have using it.
You know, I got to tell you, the problem with antiviruses is you only know it's working if nothing happens.
So that's right. How much it's working, but it's the lack of time you spent dealing with it.
Yeah, I do like that. It stays out of the way, and that's important. So what can I do for you today?
Well, I'm looking for some software to clean up these older PCs or XPs and Vista. Got 1.7. But there's so many advertised, and I don't want to load them all, one at a time to see which one really does a good job, because this could be problematic probably.
Well, I can tell you the truth. None of them. So I'll save you some time.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big business. You see these ads all the time. Speed up my computer. Press this magic button. Most of them don't do much. If you got one that was good, it would do a few things. It would clean your temp folders, clean your cache. It might clean your registry, although that can be problematic. I'll explain why in a minute. And some of the good ones have malware detectors in it. You know, the number one reason computers get slow is because they've got viruses on them. So you don't have to worry about that. You've got NOD 32. Most of the time, these programs are just snake oil.
All right.
Do you find that your computer's running slow?
Yes. And
let me ask you, how old is the computer? When's the last time you reinstalled Windows?
Well, none of them had reinstallation.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So you have three of them. So here's the deal. As you use Windows over a period of time, and I would say anything more than a couple of years is too long, we call it bit rot. You gather, files on there, programs on there that slow you down. You probably have a bunch of things running in the background. You may have malware. I don't think you do because you got NOD 32. But you might have stuff that you installed that you thought was great, and it isn't. There's also the problem with hard drives as they get older. Sometimes they get harder to read. You may even have sector failures. That's probably the reason for slowdown for most computers. That's something no software can fix. You need to, in effect, remap the bad sectors on the hard drive. You can do it in place if you buy a program like SpinRite. My friend Steve Gibson sells that. And what it does is it moves data off of hard-to-read sectors and can speed up your system quite a bit. But generally speaking, every year or two, I would recommend starting fresh, formatting the hard drive. You've got to collect your Windows disk. You've got to have a Windows installer. Otherwise, you can't do this. Or a system recovery disk. Get those together. Get the apps disks that you need together. Get any data backed up. And then format the drive. Then reinstall Windows. And frankly, that's going to give you the best speed up. It's something those programs just can't do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte, here for hour number three of the Tech Guy Festival. If you have a question about tech, I might have the answer. Generally speaking, we can answer almost any question. If it's not from my head, it comes from the collective wisdom of the chat room, the wisdom of the rabble. You can visit that chat room by going to our website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. That's where you'll find show notes as well, all the links that I mentioned on the show, additional information, and links to the video and audio and the podcast and all of that. TechGuyLabs.com. Soon to be modernized. It looks right now like one of those motels that was built in the 60s and the pool's empty and filled with leaves. But we're going to put water in the pool. We're going to polish up the ironwork. New carpet, new drapes. It's going to be so much nicer. We did a massive renovation on the site, and the new site will be up soon, like in the next couple of weeks. Richard's in Frankfort, Delaware, our next caller. Hey, Richard, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Hey, yesterday I received a call, telephone call from someone that said they were from Microsoft Windows, and they asked me to turn my computer on because they were getting a lot of error messages from my it's a new computer.
They're liars! That's a scam. Do not believe them.
Okay, because they made me turn control of the computer over to Microsoft. They say hit the Windows key and the R key.
Did you do it?
And then they took control of the computer and went through it. So I was scammed, right?
Yeah.
Who was it that was calling?
Generally, it is, interestingly enough, well, first of all, crooks. But generally, it's definitely not Microsoft. It is often tech support people in India and other places, China, who have some free time on their hands. And they use them to put stuff on your system. Now, the Windows R just brings up the resource monitor. And that's when they say, oh, you see all those things? That's bad.
Right.
And then they try to get you to give them control. Did they ask you for a credit card?
No. I shut the computer off once the thing flashed up on the screen. They wanted $279 for 7 years for this secure sockets layer, which I think is already on the computer, right?
The secure sockets layer. Your bit pump's heavily compromised, but we can replace that with a brand new bit pump for just $179. it's all bogus. It's fake. They are not doing you any favors. My question is, what did they do when they had access to your computer? Very likely they put something on there. If they didn't get money from you, they tried. You were smart. So Microsoft doesn't do this. This is not something that they do. They warn people against it. It's very credible because they get you to do the command, Windows R, and then they have you type a few things, and all of a sudden you're seeing scary stuff on your screen, and they're saying, "You see, I told you that you had problems. Now
exactly.
I'm going to have to fix it. Let me get in there."
You've even got the accent.
Oh, I know
right.
Who this guy is. He calls everybody. So it's really unfortunate. It is a scam. I'm sorry you got scammed. Do you have the original install disks for your computer?
I don't believe I got any with it.
Hate it when
that
happens.
It's a HP.
Yeah.
And,
so HP does give you the option to make recovery disks.
Okay.
Generally speaking, and I would look for that. You might need some blank disks. They have a hidden partition. If you can create them, do. They'll probably still be okay. Usually, Bombay Bob is not so sophisticated that he modifies the recovery partition.
Okay.
But you need to if you can either create those disks or reboot to the recovery. There'll be a recovery mode during boot and reinstall Windows.
Okay.
Because
I'm not real sophisticated.
Yeah,
with it.
You probably
I know how to turn the computer on, but
right.
That's about it.
Yeah, how new is the computer?
It's 3-4 weeks old.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Richard.
Yeah.
Yeah, and see, we're kind of credible because you just bought it, and maybe this is part of the free service. the 3 1-month tune-up plan.
Right.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. What you if it's so new, you might be able to bring it back where you got it and say, hey, can you fix this? You know, format it. It is really unfortunate. The problem is, it may be that they didn't do anything bad to your system, that the payoff for them is getting you to buy that $279 bogus service plan. So I can't be sure that nothing bad happened, that something bad happened. But there's just that risk. Once they're in your computer, they, you know, could, and if I were them, would put, because I'm an evil man, I put malware on there. Things like keystroke loggers that would watch, you know, watch what you do and send it off to them afterwards. You might contact HP and say, hey, I just bought this computer. Can I get some recovery disks? They might send them to you for a nominal shipping fee. That's always best because the disks cannot be modified. They're, you know, they come from HP. They're CDs. They can't be modified. You do and certainly have a recovery partition on there. So when you reboot, you will have that option to recover. But I don't think the recovery partition is compromised, but it could be because it's just part of the hard drive. And if this guy is sophisticated, and usually they're at least somewhat sophisticated, he could have modified that as well. It's nasty, isn't it? I'm so sorry. And everybody listening, Microsoft will not call you. And if you do get a call like that, say, oh, can I call you back? sure, that'd be great. Let me get that 800 number, that Microsoft 800 number that I can call you back in Redmond, Washington. No, you know, it's really unfortunate. Do not trust people who call you from out of the blue and ask to do things to your system. Don't. They're never nice. Dan in Orange, is it Colorado? Hi, Dan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. My name is Bill. You know Dan. I graduated in 2008 with a degree in finance, and unfortunately, that was a bad time for that.
And, you mean Goldman Sachs isn't hiring?
I was interning at, not Goldman, but Smith Barney at the time. They didn't say they had a position for me.
Yeah.
So,
hey, don't worry. It will turn around, Dan. You've got a great degree. That's a useful degree. There's plenty. You know what I would do? I would look for a startup that's looking for somebody to run their financials.
Well, actually, I started getting into the enterprise software.
Cool.
Kind of has a weird roundabout way where my company didn't have any CRM or enterprise. They were using some real basic softwares, and they were really impressed that I built my own CRM out of Microsoft Access. And what I started to realize is that there's a lot of companies like that just don't have the CRM and they don't have the enterprise software, and there's so much coming on to the web and the cloud that a small and a medium-sized company can now go and do something like NetSuite for a very reasonable price, but they just don't know how to do that. And so I've been thinking about trying to start my own company, trying to teach people and help them as a user support. And what I found out is that's called a VAR, value-added reseller.
That's right.
Is that right?
Yep. That'd be an interesting business. I wouldn't get into the CRM business particularly because you're competing against people like Salesforce and Microsoft itself. But I think helping people doing that is a great idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo, Customer Relationship Manager, CRM, very hot software category right now. Salesforce does it, Microsoft does it, everybody has a CRM program, and there's even open source CRM, Sugar CRM, that's fairly popular. But companies, I agree, companies barely know how to use this stuff, and they're just starting to get into the digital age. Another thing, Dan, companies need, and we have, in fact, hired somebody to do, is manage, you know, customer relationships in other ways through social media, paying attention to Twitter and to Facebook. There's all sorts of stuff that companies don't understand now in this digital age that they can use help with. And you're a young guy just out of school. You understand finance. If you understand this, I think you probably can always get a job doing something like this along these lines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, what you don't want to be is a social media consultant, because that looks terrible. when Twitter came out, there was a million people said, "Oh yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm gonna help you with social media." And I think it's larger than that. I think it really is customer relationship management. But I think what you do is you extend the idea beyond just a phone line to how do we reach out to customers everywhere? Because customers are out there and they're talking about you.
Right. Yeah. But my question for you was more, I was thinking about starting my own company, and especially the CRM seems to be one part of the larger enterprise. And the entire enterprise is now going into the cloud.
Oh, yeah. They call it software as a service, or SaaS.
Right. So my idea was to start my own company and go after small businesses in my area and just, go door to door. And so I can find someone that needs the software as a service where I can provide the added benefit, the added value. And then sell them the cloud software and get, they can purchase it themselves, but I charge them for my customer support.
Yeah, I think so. I think that it's a huge opportunity. I think there are a lot of people out there who claim to know how to do it, but don't. And I think that what you're focusing on small business and helping them make their way in this modern internet-powered age is a very good thing. And I wish you the best. I think you're kind of paving the way. There's not a lot of people doing it, and there's no kind of standard. There's no certification. There's no even job title. You're going to have to come up with a new job title. But I think that there's a huge opportunity.
Right. Well, and Oracle and SAP seem to be buying up the cloud companies that are doing enterprise and implementing them into their older style of doing these huge servers. And
well, you know why companies like Oracle and SAP like this is they can make more money. Microsoft, too. They've always wanted to rent you software. One of the advantages of making software be a service that's on the internet is you don't buy it. You rent it.
Right.
And that's a monthly fee. And I think that's another thing you could be very valuable with small businesses is warning them off of some of the issues. Because there are some scary things. We just moved my company. We're doing a number of different things. We're looking at a service called Podio, podio.com, which is almost replaces email in the company. It's a way of having a dashboard and have people communicate with one another about projects. It's a project manager, but you can also, it's got lots of plugins for other things. It's really kind of cool. Calendars. And then, of course, so that's one solution that we've been starting to take a little bit of a look at. But there are other ways to kind of modernize the office. And nobody really knows yet what's going to win or what works best or how to do it. The cloud can be a little risky because your stuff isn't local to you. If your internet goes down, what happens? So you got to look into things like that. I think there's a big opportunity for somebody. To really get this, we started using something called Zoho Office as well. A lot of people are using Google Docs. Zoho has been around for even longer than Google Docs. Same idea, where instead of having a word processor on your computer, you have a word processor in the cloud that you use. Zoho also does CRM, and we use their wiki as an intranet, as a company intranet, because one of the things we found that was a problem is that one person in the company knows how to do something. That information isn't readily available to other people in the company. And so we're using the wiki to document our processes so anybody can go to the intranet and look at the wiki and say, that's how you do that. Oh, that's how that's set up. And this is something the companies deal with as they get bigger. We now have 22 employees. As you get bigger, some of these issues start to crop up. If it's just three people, you can, shout across the desk, "Hey, John, how do you do that?" And he can tell you. Zoho's pretty cool. Zoho's been around a long time, and I like it. We do use Google Docs quite a bit as well. All of these are what we call software as a service or cloud software. They don't run on your desktop. They run in your browser. Yes, in fact, my my lunchtime salad recipe is on our wiki. Very important. That's not, don't, hey, that's important stuff. How do you make Leo's salad? David in Irvine, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, David.
How you doing today, Leo?
I am well. How are you, David?
I'm great. I appreciate the show. Listen, I'm a songwriter and a member of ASCAP, so I thought it'd be a good idea to launch a YouTube channel, and I did it a couple months ago. And it's helped me with, you know, managers and different studios and being able to access my material. But I've got some weird addresses showing up when I go like two layers in. If you go to the channel stats, then go into demographics, it'll list like in France or in England or here in the United States, it'll list the videos people are watching. But some bizarre address shows up in there without even a title. It's like one of those YouTube addresses where the rest of my titles are listed, and I never uploaded this thing, and I can't read it, I can't see what it is, and I don't know if other people are seeing it. And I've gone to like other computers at the library and stuff to see if it would show up there, but I can't get it off, and I don't know how it got there or if this is something that happened.
You know, and the problem with Google and YouTube is you can't exactly call them, can you?
No.
Nobody answers.
No, I have to say, they sold me some ad stuff on there, and the guy did call me from there, but he doesn't know too much technically, but he was helpful. So it was pretty
Yeah, they have good salesmen. They have a very large sales force. My experience with the Google sales force, the YouTube sales force, is they have no idea even what a computer is, but they're good at selling. So what is your channel? YouTube.com/?
It's my channel is just the YouTube search David Hare TV, H-A-R-E like a rabbit, David Hare TV, or you can see the embeds at davidhare.org.
This is your music that you're doing?
Yeah, pretty eclectic. Right now I'm focusing on a musical that I'm writing, and I'm sampling some of my writer samples. These aren't finished productions, but they're samples of the writer's draft of the tunes, and I've been getting some really neat feedback, and it's helped me with managers, agents.
I'm glad it's working for you. I don't know what those mystery entries are. Maybe somebody in the chat room has seen them. I just don't know the answer to that one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we're taking more calls here. Let's go to Wendell in Sweetwater, Texas. Hi, Wendell. Leo Laporte here.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. I got a question about a projector.
All right.
So I heard you talking to Scott the other day about you'd installed one. I've got a room that's about 40 foot long that I teach out of.
40 feet? That's a long room.
Yeah, it is. And I need to know what size projector I need to so people can see it from the back of the room.
Yeah. Well, now, do you have to put the projector in the back of the room? Could you suspend it from the ceiling a little closer to the screen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we put the projector where we need to.
So that would be a good idea. This is what you're talking about is the projector's throw. And, of course, a projector that can go that far is going to have to be a lot brighter and possibly a lot more expensive. There are ways to figure this out. There is a projection calculator at projectorcentral.com, for instance, where you can enter in a manufacturer and find out, you know, how big a size screen you're going to have if you're 40 feet away from it.
Okay. All right.
Because that's the problem, right? As you get farther and farther away, the screen size gets smaller and smaller and smaller. If you can, the best thing to do would be to suspend, and you'll see this all the time in restaurants and everywhere where they're using projection, is they'll hang a projector closer to the screen. They won't put it in the back of the room, in other words. 40 feet.
Oh, we can do that. We can hang it anywhere we want to.
Yeah.
But I just didn't know what size. I've got a lot of windows in the room, so we're going to have something,
I
think.
You're gonna need to darken it as well. Yeah, it's not, the projectors will have a lumens rating. That's how bright they are. But that isn't really the issue for you, because even if it's very bright, as you get farther away, you need the lumen, the brightness, to increase at a nonlinear rate, exponentially. So it takes a lot of brightness to go 40 feet, a lot more than four times the brightness to go 10 feet. So ideally, you're going to want that projector kind of around 10 to 15 feet from the screen. If you can put it there, then you can use almost any projector.
Almost any projector. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I needed to find out.
I'm using, just for your, you know, for your information, I'm using an Epson projector, which I like a lot. It's one that's no longer manufactured. I just happen to have it. It was their Powerlight home cinema projector. But they have a number of more modern Powerlight projectors. They're, I think they're very good. I've been very happy with the Epsons. In fact, we use an Epson here. Epson, yeah. We use an Epson here in the studio. And a disclaimer, Epson's a printer company that advertises with us, but we use an Epson projector in the studio and does a great job for us. They also have some very compact projectors. Is it movies you want to show or PowerPoint presentations? What kind of things do you need to?
No, be mostly PowerPoint presentations and maps and that type of stuff.
Yeah, I really like the Epson projectors. I think you get a good bang for your buck. They have ceiling-mounted ones that are often used in schools. In fact, they have some that are what we call short throw projectors. Those are kind of interesting. They can be put really close to the screen. And a lot of schools use those. They'll hang it from the ceiling, like just a few feet from the screen. And that way they get the, you know, they, it's works quite easily for them. It doesn't take up a lot of room. They have Epson has a new projector, which I just heard about. I haven't tried. They call it the Megaplex, which is actually a dock for your iPhone or your video phone. You put the phone in the projector. I guess people have, they have a video on their iPhone, so they dock it onto the projector and then play back movies on the screen. That's the other thing, of course, you want a big screen. I've been talking a lot about that. I use a screen that I got from Monoprice fairly affordably. A screen will make a big difference in terms of the luminance than projecting against a wall. I think this is just wild, but if you think about it, a lot of people have content on their iPhone or their iPad that they want to project it up against the wall. In fact, you could put PowerPoint, or they, I guess they call it Keynote in the Apple world, on your iPad. It's actually a very good presentation manager. Put your presentations on there and connect it up, dock it, which is pretty funny. They actually show people playing games on their iPad on this projector, the Megaplex. I think you should be able to do that fine, Wendell. It's just, you know, not too hard to find the right projector. You just have to be aware of it. And I'll put a link in the show notes of this projection calculator. That's a useful thing to figure out how, what the throw is of the projector. Bob in Freetown, Massachusetts. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Listen to you every Sunday.
Bless you, sir.
My problem is my PC got a virus about 2 months ago. Completely shut it down, and I took it to a PC repairman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think basically what he did was just reloaded Windows.
Right.
And I've
That's the right thing to do, although the wrong thing to do is to not warn you he's going to do that and give you a chance to back up. You didn't have a backup, huh?
No, I didn't.
And he didn't warn you. He didn't say, hey, I'm going to fix this, but it's going to wipe your hard drive. That's the right thing to do. It's the only way, really, to be sure you fixed it.
Okay.
Golly, he didn't warn you he was going to do that.
I'm sorry?
He did not warn you that he was
going to... No, he didn't.
Well...
No, I just wondered if they were still somewhere on the C drive and I could recover them.
They might be. It depends on how he did it.
Okay.
You should probably ask him. I would guess there's nothing on there. Here's the deal. When you delete a file on almost any operating system, it doesn't actually, unless you explicitly tell it to, wipe the data out. It's much simpler than that. On Windows, for instance, it renames the file, changes the first character of the file name, and then goes to the catalog and says, yeah, this space is free. You can use this. Actually, renaming it does that. But the data is still there. So there are plenty of unerase programs. The first one, this is actually how Peter Norton made his name, was he wrote an unerase program, and all it did is it scanned the hard drive looking for this funny upside-down E at the first letter in a file name and said, oh, that one's been erased, and renamed the file and recovered all the data and then told the catalog, because, you know, every hard drive has a kind of table of contents, and told the table of contents, hey, this file's there, don't use that. That space is allocated. So reversing the eraser process is pretty easy. The problem is, once the file allocation table says an area is unallocated, it can be written to. And if it's written to, then you can't recover it because somebody's overwritten your data. In the case of a full reinstall of Windows, if the guy repartitioned and formatted the drive and then put Windows on it, he's pretty much erased all your data. There might be traces of it lying around, but chances are pretty good it's gone. It's gone. And he said it was 2 months ago this happened? That's definitely gone. I'd missed that part. If you accidentally erase a file, don't touch anything. Run an unerase program from another disk. Don't even put it on the disk. If you install it, you run the risk of overwriting the data. Run it from another disk, and you might be able to get that data back. In fact, if you haven't done anything to the hard drive, you certainly can. But once you format and install a new operating system, it has a pretty good chance you've overwritten everything. So I don't hold high hopes for you getting it back. And shame on that guy at the shop for not telling you, because he really had a duty to tell you. It is a good thing to know. Whenever you bring in a computer to any computer store, back up the drive first, because they probably have a sign. It's probably buried under a bunch of parts that says, "We are not responsible for the data on your hard drive. Make sure you've backed it up before you give us the computer." That's how he's going to say, "Oh, no, it's right under here. See that? Didn't you see that?" Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Just a game we played when we were kids.
You're gonna make me cry again, aren't you?
Hanging up my boots. I'm up here with God, and we're both watching over you. So
this is why I can't listen to country music. I'm driving down the road bawling my eyes out. Our deepest thanks to all the men and women who have served the U.S. over the years. On this Memorial Day, to the great gift they have given us all. Weston in Canyon Lake, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Weston.
Yes, Leo. How's it going?
It is well. How are you?
Another fine day.
Yes. Another fine day, another broken computer.
Oh, yes. No, I just had the long-living question of defragging a solid-state drive.
You don't have to.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. Why do we need to defrag or optimize drives? Because when a hard drive is used and written to, traditionally on a spinning drive, it's faster if all of the sectors are in order than if they're all over the drive, because spinning drives have something called seek time, the amount of time it takes for the read head on the drive to move to the next sector. And if you have to move the head around a lot, that seek time starts to add up, your drive gets slower. So optimizing or defragmenting the drive reduces the overhead due to seek time. Now let's go to the flash memory, the higher speed solid state drives. They have zero seek time. They read random access. They pick a sector from anywhere. It takes no longer to read a sector on one part of the drive than anywhere else. It takes no longer to read two sectors from opposite sides of the drive than it does two sectors side by side. So, in fact, defragging a solid-state drive doesn't even make sense. In fact, it could be bad for the drive because the more you write to solid-state memory, the faster it wears out. It has a certain limited number of write times.
And that's the benefit of having one smaller solid-state drive to just
It's not the only benefit, but you're right. One of the benefits of solid-state drives is zero seek time compared to some milliseconds of seek time on a spinning drive. There's also latency on a spinning drive. And think about this. This drive is spinning, and you read part of the drive. Now you got to read the next part. But wait a minute. The drive has moved on. So you have to wait. There's some latency involved in waiting for the drive to spin all the way around again. That's gone. So reads and writes tend to be considerably faster on solid-state drives than on traditional rotating hard disk drives. Writes can sometimes be slow, and there are other problems associated with solid-state drives. There is something that is like fragmentation, that has to do with the fact that you have to erase blocks on the solid-state drive before you can write to them. And so to speed up solid-state drives, most solid-state drives, firmware and the operating systems don't do the erasing until necessary. And what happens with a solid-state drive is it starts very fast and then gets a little bit slower as it's used until such time as you run what's called the trim operation, which will then pre-erase the solid-state drive, and it'll be as fast as it was originally. Now, I've actually stood, last year at CES, two guys from Intel's solid-state research division came up to me to talk to me. Now, Intel makes the best solid-state drives. And I asked them this. I said, you know, is trim important on a solid-state drive? One said yes and one said no. Same guys, same company. One said yes and one said no. The one who said yes said, had a good point, which is trim, and most operating systems now support trim, Windows 7, OS 10, and most solid-state firmware supports it. Trim will keep a drive up to its full speed. The other guy said, yeah, but it's so fast anyway, it doesn't really matter. So, in truth, they were both right. In other words, so no, don't worry about it.
You have, you know, that I have a brand new quad-core Precision, you know, laptop from Dell. And, you know, top of the line, everything in it. And I have lag times of, you know, somewhat seems like a video lag time. But also, it's, you know, how Dell has those battery meter. You can change from ultra performance.
Yeah, there may be other things. That's speed step. That's Intel's attempt on laptops to save power by slowing the processor down.
Right.
That's a different thing. There's, you know, the problem with a computer now is it's a fairly complex system. You've got a lot of different things impacting the speed of the computer. We all focus on processor speed, but most Intel processors don't run at full speed all the time anyway. We often forget how important I/O speed, input-output speed, is, and that has a lot to do with the speed of your hard drive. In fact, one of the ways to speed up a computer, and I suspect this is where you're going, Weston, is to put a solid-state drive in it. There are some caveats. For instance, an older computer will not have a fast enough data bus to take advantage of the faster drive. So you want a modern computer with SATA 3 data buses, a high-speed data bus, that will then be fast enough to keep up with the drive. So it's a lot of things. It's the speed of the drive, the speed of the processor, the speed of the data bus, how fast data can be moved around inside the computer. All of that makes a big difference. Most people, frankly, don't have to worry about this. If you feel like your drive is slow, if you feel like you can get a new one, if you feel like your computer's slow, get a new one. It will be faster. And to answer Wayne Mann's question in our chat room, no, SSDs are not affected by airport X-ray machines. They're pretty robust. In fact, most new laptops now are shipping with SSDs. This is the wave of the future. They're more expensive per gigabyte. That's why you tend to get smaller drives, 64 gig, 128 gig, maybe 256 gig, because they tend to be more expensive. But those prices are dropping too. Richard in San Pedro, California. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Pretty good. Here's to the fallen.
Yeah.
Listen, I have a new laptop, a new HP laptop. I like it a lot. But I'm having problems with the new version of IE. I'm not sure what number I'm on because I just don't know.
I would guess it's IE8, but...
Yeah, in fact, I'm sure it's 8.
Yeah.
But the strangest thing's been happening, sir. More times than not, I'll click on IE, and instead of my homepage Yahoo coming up, which is what I want, a bar at the bottom will come on and say, do you want to open or save to a file? And the file they want to save it to is yahoo_com.
Huh.
So I'll go, okay, and then I'll hit cancel or try and save it. A box will come up saying, view and track your downloads. and I'll say, okay, I'll save it in there. And nothing works. Basically, I have to turn the thing on. And, you know what? I don't know what the workaround is because I just keep trying again and again and again.
Does this happen when you click a link or when you manually enter Yahoo.com?
I just double-click on IE.
Yeah.
And of course, my home address is Yahoo in the...
Got it.
When you hit so Internet
it's,
options...
It's, they, trying to, it's trying to open Yahoo. Okay, it's two possibilities. One is the simple one, and let's hope it's this, which is the file associations are screwed up. And so it thinks Yahoo.com is a file, not a URL.
That makes sense.
More likely is you've got malware that that tried to modify your homepage and failed. Well, they're very different fixes depending on whether it's malware or not. If it's malware, I'm very worried. You know, here's what I would do, Richard. There's a very easy way to check for malware. You do run Windows Update regularly? So every second Tuesday of the month, Microsoft updates Windows. And one of the ways it does this is, you know, during the Windows Update process, is updating, downloading new definitions for the malicious software removal tool. People don't even know it's on there, but Microsoft actually has it on there. MRT, and it's really great. So here's what you do. You're going to I'm going to sound like Bombay Bob here. You hit the Windows R key combination. You want to hit the run command. It could be also in your start menu. And you type in MRT. There's no icon for it. That's why we have to run it manually. So Windows key R and then type MRT and hit return. Then a program will open up and do a thorough scan. If it comes up clean, say hallelujah. And now probably it would just be a you don't have to worry about malware. I'm out of time. But it should be a fairly simple fix to get the file associations fixed. Reset your browser, probably the best thing to do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.